buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise joining you on a Wednesday afternoon. Great first hour. We did our round one, or I guess 2024 NFL draft round one mock draft. Really fun exercise. No trades involved, but just kind of going down the list of, what teams need what. You know, in the order of if there were no trades tomorrow night, what team is looking for what? And I think we did a good job with that. Make sure to listen to that on the streaming services to get you ready for tomorrow's draft. Let's see, Braves, Marlins set to have a first pitch here at 7:20. We'll get you out there at 7:15. But first, we've got In the News with Dawson Wise.
Cover a couple games, one in the NHL, one in the NBA, and then a story about the NFL draft at the end. We'll start in the NHL. The Nashville Predators have evened the odds. The Preds earned a 4-1 victory over the Vancouver Canucks in Tuesday's Game 2 of the NHL Western Conference first round. After a rough first period that saw Nashville commit several costly penalties and give Vancouver every advantage they could, when they looked up at the end of the period, they led on the scoreboard. Anthony Beauvillier set the tone early, scoring on a redirection just 1:14 into the contest, a lead that Nashville would never relinquish. The Preds scored two more goals in the second period, the first by superstar Philip Forsberg on a great bit of stick handling in front of the net at 6:29, and a second on a rebound by British Columbia native Colton Sissons at the 8:04 mark, extending the lead to 3-0. Vancouver then tried to rally. They got on the board late in the period, a goal by Nikita Zadorov, but never could get anything going the rest of the game. The final frame became a parade of block shots by Nashville and missed opportunities by Vancouver, who had multiple power plays late in the game but could never convert. Kiefer Sherwood added his first career playoff goal with an empty netter in the final 2 minutes of the tilt. Nashville outshot Vancouver 18-16 on the night. Really low totals there. Yeah. But the bigger story was block shots. Nashville blocked 32 shots on the night. Vancouver also had 31 missed shot attempts, which you can see the Canucks were visibly frustrated at their night offensively. Game 3 returns to the legendary playoff atmosphere of Bridgestone Arena on Friday, yeah, with puck drop scheduled for 6:30 p.m. Central. And when we talk about kind of what the Preds proved with Game 2, I think they proved a lot in Game 1. They played as the better of the two teams in Game 1. An unlucky break, an unlucky 15 seconds lost them that game. I think they probably played good enough to win Game 1, couldn't. Winning Game 2 and splitting this series shows me that they were not just regular season merchants. They were not just a team that was going to win 18 games in a row or get 8 points in 18 games in a row. This is a team that is ready to contend ahead of schedule, yep, and a team that's ready to get an upset, to maybe make a playoff run here. And they showed it. They showed it here. The veteran presence on this team is incredible.
Yeah.
Ryan McDonough on defensively, Ryan O'Reilly offensively, Jason Zucker offensively. He got on the board a couple nights ago in Game 1. Those guys are going to be the guys that help you when you get to the playoffs, and they showed up.
Yeah.
Combined with this weird amalgamation of former stars Saros, Josi, and Forsberg, and then these new guys that have come in, the young guys that have come in. This is a very weird, it's kind of like the Houston Texans, actually. I think, now, okay, that I think about it, a team that was kind of thrown together, mm-hmm, but it's worked. And they win a playoff game on the road. They come back with 1-1. Bridgestone is going to be rocking on Friday. I can't wait. The Preds get it done. To you, what did the Preds prove with the Game 2 win?
Yeah, so you say Houston Texans. I was going to say the Thunder.
That's fair.
When they had Chris Paul.
That's fair.
And they made it to the bubble. A little bit of youth, a little bit of vet. It doesn't look like it'd work on paper, but it does. Last night they proved they could win an unconventional way. You know, 4 goals, but only 16 shots on goal. You know, that doesn't happen. 30 blocks,
never
I
happened.
Think, was really big. It never happens. I pulled this up. The fewest shots in a playoff win in Predators history was last night. 16, and then the other two were 17, 18, and 18, and those were back in 2017 and 2012. So this was an unconventional win, but a big one on the road. Now you go back home. You know, every series, whether it's in the NHL or MLB or NBA, the series isn't over or in jeopardy until the home team loses. Now you've put Vancouver in jeopardy. So now you get to go home and possibly get it done. An unconventional win. You found a way to win. I think it says a lot about this group.
Nashville should be rocking on Friday night and over the course of the weekend for games 3 and 4. We'll go to the NBA now. Perhaps one of the most notable yet not talked about storylines the first week of the NBA playoffs is the disappointment of the Phoenix Suns.
I had a feeling you'd go this route.
The revamped squad had found their footing midway through the season, and despite being the West 6th overall seed, seemed to be on pace to at least win a series in this year's postseason, a favorable matchup against a young and understaffed Minnesota team. The start to this first round series against Minnesota, however, has been anything but what the Suns hoped for. They fell by 25 in Game 1. Phoenix, a much better approach in Game 2 on both ends, really, especially defensively. Mm-hmm. I thought they played much better defensively in Game 2, than they, at least in the first half of Game 2, than they did throughout Game 1. A lot more active, a lot more moving around, rotating, communicating. It was all better on the defensive end. They really made Minnesota work, and as such, they got to a 9-point lead at one point in the first half, and it came through the unlikeliest of sources. Eric Gordon came off the bench, hit a couple threes, including one from downtown Phoenix when he came off the bench, along with sensational shot making from Kevin Durant, exactly what we expect. He was having a nice game. But then Minnesota goes on a 6-0 run to end the half, goes in down by one, and then proceeded to take control of the game after the break. The Suns looked gassed in the second half, and to make matters worse, key contributor Grayson Allen, who injures his ankle in Game 1, re-aggravates the injury, leaves Game 2, and never returned.
Yeah.
Minnesota then outscored Phoenix 55-42 in the second half and pulled away to take a 2-0 series lead. Some stats: Devin Booker led the Suns 20 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds. Durant, 18 points. Beal, 14 points and 6 assists. Yusuf Nurkic had a really nice night, 10 points and 14 rebounds. Eric Gordon, 15 off the bench. But the game turned into the Jaden McDaniels show for Minnesota. After an early spat with Devin Booker, saw him get a technical, McDaniels went on to have one of the best games of his career. He tallied 25 points. Mike Conley had 18 points in this game, a statement I did not think I'd be saying in 2024. Rudy Gobert, 18 and 9 rebounds. Anthony Edwards, 15, 8 and 5. Towns, 12 points, 8 rebounds. And Nickel Alexander-Walker proved to be a kind of a spark plug off the bench. Yeah. Had a few big buckets in this game.
Sure.
The story of this game for Phoenix was turnovers. 19 turnovers in this game. At one point, the points off turnover battle was 29-2.
Yeah, inexcusable.
Which is a stark difference. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they were at that point down 17 in the fourth quarter. That's the story of the game right there. Phoenix returns home for Game 3 on Friday, now in an 0-2 hole in a series where I figured they'd at least win one, if not both, on the road.
I did too.
Look, and when you look back at what Matt Ishbia has done in Phoenix, he decides to trade away most of the core that got you to the NBA Finals. Cam Johnson, shipped out. Mikal Bridges, shipped out. Jay Crowder, gone. DeAndre Ayton, your home run number one overall draft pick to kind of, you know, platoon your center position, gone. Traded in the offseason. Chris Paul leaves for Golden State. Again, I think that was going to happen eventually. You're left with Devin Booker. You have Kevin Durant, who you bring in. I liked that move when they first made it. The Bradley Beal trade I was less excited about, but still, you speed up that timeline and say, you know what, if we're going to win a title, we're going to do it in the next 3 years, or we're not going to do it at all.
Yeah.
And when you look back on these decisions now in an 0-2 hole in this series, those decisions were not right, in my opinion. You traded away the guys that got you there and got veterans that, yeah, they're very good by themselves, but you don't have any bench depth anymore. You don't have any role players anymore. Times this team just does not look very coordinated. There's no chemistry. It wasn't much last night, at least offensively.
Yeah.
It's a lot of iso ball. That team in 2021 did not play that kind of basketball. The team in 2022 that won 62 games did not play that type of basketball. Everybody knew what their role was, what they were supposed to do. They've gone away from it. Was speeding up the timeline for winning with this Suns team the wrong move?
Yeah, it was then, and it still is now. When the Kevin Durant trade happened, I was not a fan of it. I said, look, you know, I know Kevin Durant's Kevin Durant, but everyone had a heyday. Kevin Durant to the Suns, Devin Booker, they're going to be so good. You know, I think they could have made that work because you have two stars, right? Bradley Beal, and then now totally foregoing any other guys on your roster, does not work. Because Bradley Beal's the most expensive player in the NBA, and, you know, he's on the wrong side of his career at this point. The term I'd use for the Suns this season, it's fragile. if something goes wrong, in a, just a just a minuscule little thing went wrong, this whole thing would have been off the deck. Grayson Allen, when he leaves last night, it's tied 57-57. He's out. It's over. You're right. That's one of your main guys. That's your best rotational piece outside of your stars.
And one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA this year.
Yes. Overall, last night, the big three goes 18 of 45 with 52 points. That's not playoff basketball. That's not winning basketball. Nope. You know, Anthony Edwards may have been right. Well, they got Kevin Durant, but we got Jane McDaniels. Jane McDaniels outplayed Kevin Durant last night. Durant had 41 minutes of play last night, 18 points. Jane McDaniels had 25, and he's not even a scorer. The Suns were fragile all year long. You were kind of waiting until this team got to the playoffs. Okay, it's the regular season. Let's wait till the playoffs. Well, now we're here, and I think they had the matchup advantage in this one. Last week I go, the Timberwolves have a tough matchup. The Suns have a matchup advantage here because they did in the regular season and they can play that small ball. They can't do that now because they don't have the players, they don't have the personnel. And credit to Minnesota, their defense has been really good.
Number one defense in the NBA for a reason.
They've swarmed them. And they did not do that in the regular season. Regular season's different than the playoffs. They've swarmed them. And now they don't have any options. Who do they go to now? Okay, Durant, the big three's not scoring. Who do you go to? Drew Eubanks? Isaiah Thomas?
I think he had 8 points last night. Drew Eubanks did.
Oh, good. Yeah, well, he needed
he needed about 20 more than that.
Maybe I should say the big four combined for 60 points.
There you go, So with that out of the way, we're going to one NFL draft story quickly here before we get down to Atlanta, and it revolves around the Las Vegas Raiders. As we know, the quarterbacks are going to be the most highly coveted commodities tomorrow night when the commissioner opens the NFL draft. We expect that each of the first three selections at least will be signal callers, with the three teams having those picks extremely unlikely to move out of those spots. But that does not mean that one of those teams cannot at least try their hand, though, and a new report says one of those teams did. NFL media reporting the Las Vegas Raiders apparently tried to strike a deal with the Washington Commanders to move up to number two to try to get a wider range of choices at the quarterback position as they intend to draft their next starting quarterback. It is no surprise the Raiders are targeting a quarterback. As of now, the returning Aiden O'Connell is the planned starter, and the free agent signee Gardner Minshew joins their roster. Neither of those guys, the long-term option for Las Vegas. They need to take advantage of this quarterback class, and according to this report, they tried to get up as high as second overall to make that selection. The same report also mentioned Washington, no intention of moving off the number two pick. ESPN's Matt Miller reports the Raiders have shown a good amount of interest in drafting Washington's Michael Penix Jr. with their current pick, which sits at number 13 overall. The problem for them would be that there are a number of QB-needy teams in front of them waiting to pounce potentially on Penix before they can ever submit the ticket. If it is believed that the Raiders had their eye on Jaden Daniels, who spent 3 years with Antonio Pierce at Arizona State before Daniels moved to LSU and Pierce went to Vegas, the Raiders still could be in business for a trade considering their current draft position at 13. If they can land Michael Penix, I think this is the right spot to stay at. The problem is there are teams that are, I think they're going to be needy for a quarterback. Minnesota is in front of them still. Denver is in front of them still. I think both those teams are in the market for a quarterback. Obviously, the top three are all taking quarterbacks. That's pretty much assumed at this point. And then you have, you know, does anybody come up from below them to try to steal one? Like the Miami Dolphins, do they try to get Bo Nix? Okay, if you're the Raiders, you're not in a bad spot to get a quarterback, but you're not in a great one either. I feel like they're going to be one of the teams to watch tomorrow to get maybe number four, to get maybe number five, and get up to one of these spots where they can grab a Michael Penix or a J.J. McCarthy at that spot. I think they have to move because there's going to be too many teams vying for these good quarterbacks to try to move. In your opinion, real quick, should Vegas make the move or can they try to get their guy at 13?
Well, so I'm just referring to the list here. So the Bears, Commanders, Patriots, you know all three of those are probably going to take one. The Giants, I think, are a wild card if they decide to get in. I think the Giants would mess up everything else. If the Giants decide to take McCarthy or the best available, I mean, the Titans, Falcons, Bears, Jets, they're not taking one. But a team could possibly trade up to one of those spots, and like the Bears at nine, they could trade up there. Minnesota, they could trade up as well. I think – and Denver as well is looking for one too. I think if you want to get a quarterback, you're going to have to make a trade. I don't think Aiden O'Connell's the guy, but I think he's serviceable enough to at least let him roll out for a year and kind of build your team from there, you know. Because I don't want to – look, I don't want to force it. I don't want to force it for the fourth best available or the third best available. If I'm going to force it, I want the one, and you know the Bears are not trading that. So maybe I'd wait. I'd roll with Aiden O'Connell this year, and then next year look for your quarterback. I don't know what the class necessarily looks like. I guess it's kind of thin with Shedeur Sanders really being the highlight. But
yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I'd probably wait it out a year.
It's going to be a fun 24 hours coming up as we await. This is one of the more fun draft seasons I can remember because of all the teams that need a quarterback, all the quarterbacks that are worth taking with those picks, and all the teams, I mean, like four, five, six teams that don't need quarterbacks that could easily move off those picks. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Last year you had, you know, Richardson, Young, Stroud, and then Levis. This year you've got five or six guys that could legitimately really be – and outside of Caleb Williams, four or five guys that could be at any point.
And teams with a lot of capital that could easily move up to get those picks, too.
Exactly. All right, we're going to send you to Atlanta, where the Marlins and Braves are set to finish out their midweek series. We will see you again tomorrow for Overtime here on Fan Run Radio. We appreciate you listening. We'll see you tomorrow.